This is a story of a failure. A failure of communication. A failure to face missteps as they happen. This podcast is my attempt to face that failure, figure out what went wrong, and to see if there's still a way to make the magic happen that I had originally hoped for. My name is Keiko Sono, and my co-host is Olivia Menedesi. This all happened in 2019. Donald Trump was the president, the pandemic was several months away, and compared to today, the world seemed less polarized. Through 2018 and 19, I produced community art projects for New York City watersheds in the Catskill Mountains. One of them was to install site-specific artwork by a contemporary artist, Chris Victor, in some local spot in the Neversink Roundout area. While we were driving around on narrow mountain roads, Chris found a spot that grabbed him immediately. A remote convenience store in a town called Sundown, that mainly served campers in the summer and hunters in the fall. Here is our first conversation with the store owner, Paul Natu.
We were originally from New York City, from Manhattan, the Lower East Side, and we would come up here on all the weekends and, you know, things like that, and during vacations until the water would freeze, you know.
Full time. I went to school in Tri-Valley. I moved up about 72 is when I went. I moved up. I did 1 year of high school down in the South Bronx. That was tough. That was first year at Cardinal Hayes High School down there, and that was a tough year. That was a year. You got to remember the early 70s were a very turbulent time, a lot of racial tensions and things like that. 70, 71, right around, you know, in that school year. So I was, I don't know, what was I, 15 years old, 14 years old, something like that. Yeah, it was shaky. It was a shaky time. That was just getting out of the hippie craze was still pretty much in full swing, but it was starting to die down a little bit because we were still involved in Vietnam at that time. And I only lived 3 blocks from St. Mark's Place on the Lower East Side.
That's where I used to live.
Did you? Yeah, I was 1 block. I was actually on 5th Street. I was 1 block from the Fillmore East. Yeah. I could listen to the bands playing. When I walked the dog, I would stand outside the stage door and I could hear the bands playing when they were on there. Yeah, wow. Moved up here full time after Cardinal Hayes. Couldn't stand it, hated it, didn't like it, didn't offer what I was interested in. And I told him, I says, listen, you know, I'm going to be 16 years old or something. I says, I'll quit school and go up north or something. I says, I'm not staying, I am not doing that school again. I absolutely hate it. I put in for Brooklyn Automotive, which is in Bed-Stuy, which is even worse at that time. It's still not good. And they said, oh, no, my father was a housing police officer, and he was hearing all these stories from the other officers that worked in that area and the projects and stuff. He says, no, you're not going there. Mm-hmm. So they moved me up here.
What, happy?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here I had a choice.
Right here?
I went to school in Tri-Valley, right in Gravesville, yeah. Graduated from there. Finally retired last year. Actually, this month makes my first year retired.
How's it going?
I love it. Oh. It's good. Oh, yeah, because I can do this more, you know, right. Work here. I set it up when I first opened this store in 2001. I set it up so that this would give me some extra pin money when I retired. So that's why I did it.
I was thinking ahead.
Yeah. I was thinking way ahead for that. You know, and I've got the only public phone. I don't even know if the Boyceville supermarket has public phones anymore. They used to. But from here to there, it's like 13, 14 miles. So
yeah,
this is the only working public phone.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we keep, you know, keep it going because there's no cell service here.
Yeah,
so
we noticed.
You found that out, didn't you?
Oh, I was so excited to use that payphone.
I was going to film her using the payphone.
It works. It works all year long.
I know.
So, the troopers all know about it. The forest rangers know about it.
Sure.
If I get a new trooper or forest ranger coming in, I always tell them, I say, listen, your repeaters are not always going to work in here. I says, but that phone is always working.
That's pretty great.
Now, what's really amazing about that phone is sometimes when everybody else's phone goes out for whatever reason, that damn thing still works.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Huh. How much is it for a call?
50 cents.
Oh, okay.
Local.
Paul's store was not an ordinary convenience store. His marquee sign read, Guns and Ammo. Among 6 packs of beer and soda, marshmallows, and other camping staples, Paul sold guns and ammunition in his small store.
You have to understand, when I'm working in the store, I'm always armed. Okay, I'm allowed to be armed. My wife is armed. The state police actually told her, because of the area we're in, you get a gun. And she has a permit, just like I do. 3 kids from Connecticut, years before that, they pull up. They come in, they buy their sodas and candy and potato chips, whatever. They bought some of this stuff. And one of them stays in here and he's just talking. I had a different counter back then. And he says, and he's standing right in front of that Coca-Cola cooler. And he says, you ever get held up here or anything? And I said, oh, where's this going to go? And I could see in the reflection of my machine there that I could see he had nothing. He had no weapons or anything. He's just a stupid kid talking. I said, okay, let's see where this is going to go. And he says, you ever get held up or anything? He says, I said, no. He says, well, what if I was to hold you up right now? I had, like I said, I had a different counter here. And it was solid. You couldn't see anything. I says, well, now I'm thinking. I says, if I shoot him, I'm going to have to buy a new cooler. Because it's going to go through him and into the glass. That's the first thing I thought about. And the next thing I said to him, I says, well, right now I have a shotgun pointed at your balls. So I wouldn't suggest you do anything stupid. And he just, oh, I says, get out of here. Go. Just go away, you know. And he did. And they all just got in their car and they went away.
What is that?
Stupid kids. Stupid stuff.
I went to school for painting originally,
okay.
And fell in love with making art through that, mainly okay. Abstract painting, although I took, like, my mom would drag me to life drawing classes every Saturday in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But I fell in love with painting, and then I went on to school to Tyler School of Art and continued that. I ended up in the prop building industry in New York. That's how I made most of my money. And that kind of introduced me to really, like, every... in that world, you have to, like, make everything. So, you know, I'd have directors barking at me to, like, build a sandcastle that can do this. And that, you know.
Gotcha.
So it took a while, but that actually fit into my work in that it introduced me to all these materials. And actually what it made me realize is I was so good at prop building, I started to realize I really wanted to paint, but I felt very limited by the canvas, by the frame, by only using paint. I was trying to build it up and... So it took a long time, but I've actually, like, fed into using really, like, every kind of material you can imagine into my work. And over the years, it's actually come into, like, you know, I frequent the transfer station in Accord a lot. I mean, amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. Quilters would leave bags of thread and, you know. And I kind of resisted it because I just didn't, I mean, I don't know how much if you follow any kind of contemporary art, but there's a whole world of art where people are, like, using trash or using recycled materials.
We've seen some of the home improvement shows how they recycle, you know, wood and stuff to make different frames for things on a wall.
Right.
Yeah, we've seen that and wrap it in barbed wire. And
yes.
That's where it should stay is on the wall because it's barbed wire.
No one's going to take it down.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question, it's actually like contemporary sculpture, but I really make a lot of it out of... like found materials and, you know, I have a little bit of a push and pull with the art thing. So, which is a part of my interest in doing something like this is, you know, I love going to a gallery. I love seeing art in that way. It was kind of the way, for me, it's like church. It's like, that's the way, that's the way I connected with it was a clean space where I'm not distracted by other things. But as I'm sure you well know, we all know, it brought in like a whole other the art world brings in a whole other thing of like elitism and mm-hmm. of the value, which I'm sure you're aware of, the, you know, this insane values of art. And, you know, there's a lot of baggage with it. And, mm-hmm. you know, not that I want to make that the point of this project or my art in general, but I really do like the idea of like, you know, and I know Keiko's big in this too, with like not, you know, I don't say we actively are like fighting that notion with art, but I don't want to indulge it necessarily. And I'm happy to do things that make it, because what I'm interested in is people really being able to approach the work that I'm doing, you know, in a more authentic way where there's not that sort of, there's a lot of like, yeah, elitism, you know, if you don't, maybe you don't understand it and you don't get it, but I get it kind of thing.
Kind of would like to get an idea of what you, do you have the, getting yeah, into. So, yeah. What,
yep.
What's some of the...
So I work pretty, very improvisationally. Okay. So, meaning I'll use, like, take a material, again, you know, if it was paint, I'm working with paint. If I'm working with, I like to take whatever parameters I have. I'm a big MacGyver fan.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So, like, I like taking whatever parameters I have, either in an environment or with a material, okay. and using those as, like, springboards for ideas.
Okay.
So, one thing that struck me right away in your spot here was the spot between the vending machine and right. the payphone.
Mm-hmm.
But my initial idea was, I love that this would be outside. So immediately I'm like, this is something that can't, like, I don't want to have disintegrate in the weather.
Mm-hmm.
So I love using, I'm really drawn to using like, construction materials and stuff that we kind of interact with mm-hmm. in a normal, you know, they're not like precious materials.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pallet. You can see
some right.
concrete blocks, ratchet straps and things. Mm-hmm. These are water jugs, you know, something that started to get me kind of excited. I do some kinetic work where it's like, do you know Rube Goldberg? So these machines that will trick something else to do something else.
Right. Just yeah. Kind of I've cascading. Seen that. Yeah. Cascading
so
machines. Yeah.
He was a big artist that did a lot of that. And this wouldn't necessarily, you know, incorporate like that much kinetic, but it'll have little elements that,
something like this would actually, if you put it underneath the eaves, it would catch it.
We were just looking at this and I'm looking at it and I'm realizing, oh, you don't have a gutter there. And I have these little gutter sections.
Yeah.
So maybe interesting things could happen with the water, you know, maybe collecting in here and then feeding out into other areas. I would really be kind of excited with the idea that like this piece, you would still understand and see the piece as it is. But if you saw it when it was raining or right after it had rained, you would be able to see how the water was interacting with yeah. it, and you might only be able to get it then.
Right, that's true.
So,
yeah, I understand. Yeah.
This is just an initial concept, and like I said, things will kind of develop as they mm-hmm. as I start to, you know, actually find materials and decide right. on what they were. And I didn't want to go too far without having a conversation with you.
Right, I got you.
I was happy to hear Chris talk about the kinetic part and see Paul really interested in this idea, because this was really a pretty new idea coming from Chris. It's a divergent from his normal work. I actually own one of his works. It's from a series he was doing about 10 years ago. He would take an object like a plastic milk crate or a chair or even a guitar and reduce it to skeleton using a drill. Mine is a quarter, you know, like the money quarter that he drilled from inside out until he just had this delicate ring. I can't really explain it, but it's really quite moving to hold it in my hand. You know, it's an absurd idea, but knowing that it was once a quarter, but now it's only a ghost of it and it's no longer functional. But in exchange, it gained something that is far more valuable in its fragile beauty.
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. With that particular piece that you were describing, taking out that sort of regular, normal function of currency and turning it into something as beautiful or simple as like a little ring, it kind of brings up a lot of thoughts beyond its actual physical purpose. And it gives it kind of a new purpose. That transcendence, I feel like that's something that everyone can sort of relate to in some way, shape, or form with any sort of artwork.
All right, so this is the one concept. Do you have any, I'm just curious, do you have anything else that you've
yeah,
done?
You know,
other work?
I
just curious.
Bring
yeah,
your
yeah.
photos.
Yeah, I just want to see some of your, totally. I just yeah. want to see what your
yeah
your idea is about things.
Well, there's lots and lots
a
of
sketch or pictures. Or,
this is a sculpture, actually, that I did. I was sort of obsessed with that's my studio chair.
Okay.
I actually just took an angle grinder and a Dremel, and I just like went at it. I was really obsessed with just finding how thin I could get this thing to be, how skeletal it could become. It's actually at the point where you can feel like this is heavy enough that you can just feel it sag slightly. Mm. But I love that, like, something that was okay. So useful and something I never thought about okay. suddenly became frail. And, you know, and a friend of mine bought that, and he's got to take care of it, you know. I told him, you can't have a dog if you own that piece of artwork.
No, not that, no.
This actually was a, this is called Zero. This actually was just a Gatorade bottle.
Okay.
Which is hard to describe, but I would cut it on my bandsaw and then hot glue it back together repeatedly. So all these vertical lines are cut repeatedly on the bandsaw and glued back together. Mm-hmm. And then I did that horizontally.
Okay.
I didn't have a plan for this. I just was kind of winging it, you know?
Okay.
So I basically had a Gatorade bottle that had a grid. It looked like a Gatorade bottle with a grid of hot glue lines.
Okay. As soon as he said Gatorade bottle, then I knew the dimensions. All right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I sell 32 ounce Gatorade, so I know. Yeah, I know.
So it was just like, it sat in my studio a long time. It's just this gridded thing. And I went, that's just not interesting. Oh, it's just a Gatorade bottle with a grid. And then what I went, you know, I'll bet I could, with a hot knife, I could cut these little... You know, same way with the chair, like, oh, I'll reduce all the material. I went, how could I reduce this? I thought, you know what, I can cut through the hot glue too, section. Yeah. So I used a candle, which is why it's blackened from carbon, and I heated a Xacto blade, and I plunge cut every other one, so it checker patterned.
How long did this take you to do?
It took me a long time, It took me a week, you know.
But
even while I'm doing it, I'm going, this is not going to work. This thing's going to fall apart. Because now you can imagine every little, it's only held together by these tiny little... joints of hot glue, but I got it all done, and every time I cut one of the pieces out, I left it inside the bottle, and then, you know, it's amazing, actually. It's like, it's weak, it's like, you know, you have to take care of it, but I'm still always amazed at how strong it actually is. You can squeeze it, and it's got a little give, and I actually just, somebody bought this, and I had to get it out to Denver for them. So my dad, who happened to be here visiting, took that. I built a specialized crate for it, and he took it as a carry-on in Denver. I said, I can't ship this. You have to hand carry it. Wow. So anyway.
You have no idea how excited I was as I listened to this conversation. This artwork, Zero, is a piece that barely resembles the original Gatorade bottle. And unlike the perfect delicate ring of my quarter, it's not exactly pretty in a traditional sense. It's more about the process. And Paul understood that. This is the kind of moment that I live for as an artist and producer. This moment of connection on a deep level that's achieved by this shared experience that's a result of your artwork. That's the essence. That's the essence of art. All the musicians, artists, and writers that I interviewed say that it's when the audience lets them know that their work had an impact on them. That's what keeps them going. That's why they do what they do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really was struck by the piece when I first saw it in a picture, the Gatorade bottle piece. I didn't quite see that it was a Gatorade bottle when I first saw it, but hearing Chris explain what went into it and sort of the process of how it came to be, like, made so much more of a difference. And I definitely heard that exchange between Chris and Paul on that. It was really cool.
Yeah, so I thought I had this one in the bag. I thought they were going to continue on this positive, collaborative path, and that the best thing for me was to step aside and let them lead. This was my first mistake.
Thank you for listening to Sundown. Sundown is a production of Forge Collective, a platform for co-creating stories of the future we want to envision. For more information and photos of Chris's work and our project, visit forgeartcollective.org. Many thanks to Chris Victor, Paul and Barbara Natu, and Don Ryan and Victoria Blade for their participation, and to John Notar for the theme music. This project was made possible in part with funds from the statewide Community ReGrants Program, a re-grant program of the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of Governor Hochul and the New York State Legislature, and administered by Arts Mid-Hudson.